Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-1623-L.
Simpson, what can you add to what Justice Kennedy said?
Your Honor, I'm not sure I can add a lot. And as Your Honor recognized, just last week, the Supreme Court held in the Citizens United decision that corporations are now entitled to make unlimited expenditures, independent expenditures, without having to spend that money through the burdensome mechanism of setting up a separate PAC. As Your Honors know from the briefs, our position is based on a simple and straightforward proposition. If individuals are entitled to make unlimited independent expenditures for their speech, they must be entitled to join with other individuals in association and spend precisely the same amounts of money as a group as they would be able to do as individuals. Now that the Supreme Court has held that corporations may do that, Your Honors, we believe that the exact same rule must apply to groups like Speech Now, which is an unincorporated association. To quote from the Supreme Court's decision last week, and this is from page 33 of the slip opinion, Your Honors, quote, if the First Amendment has any force, it prohibits Congress from fining or jailing citizens or associations of citizens for simply engaging in political speech. Your Honors, we think that that and the rest of the Supreme Court's opinion makes clear that the arguments we've made in the briefs, that the basic principles that the three-judge panel in this court relied on in Emily's List apply with full force to Speech Now and mean that this court should rule in Speech Now's favor and reject the FEC's arguments. Now, Your Honors, obviously, the Citizens United decision has a profound impact on this case. So if you'll permit me, I'd like to turn to the decision and discuss a bit about what the decision did and why we think it mandates a ruling in our favor. Your Honor, I think that the first and foremost, the simplest way to understand why Citizens United is on all fours with this case and why we prevail under Citizens United is the simple fact that the core holding in the Supreme Court's decision was that corporations cannot be required to set up separate PACs in order to make their independent expenditures. They cannot be required to do what the Supreme Court saw, and we argued in our briefs, is an enormously burdensome alternative to being able to speak without regulation. That is, set up a PAC and run all of your expenditures through that PAC. Your Honors, the FEC in this case is arguing that Speech Now must be required to do precisely the same thing, exactly what the Supreme Court just said 1 week ago. Corporations couldn't be required to do. The FEC's position here is Speech Now, simply because it is associating together, must set up a PAC and do what corporations cannot be required to do.
That was the FEC's position in a brief written before it had the benefit of the Citizens United case.
That's right, Your Honor.
So what the commission is actually going to be saying today may be somewhat different, and I'm sure you will be prepared to respond to it. You may want to save some time.
You may want to save time, a good bit of time to respond.
Your Honor, I'm more than happy to reserve the balance of my time if the court.
Well, if you want to address the disclosure issues, this might be a good time.
Sure, Your Honor. I mean, the disclosure issues, I think, in this case, in our case, are on all fours with precisely what the Supreme Court just ruled in Citizens United. In other words, the court held that the government's interests in disclosure in Citizens United will be adequately served through the disclosure mechanism of 434F. We are arguing in this case not against disclosure at all. We are simply arguing that precisely the same sort of disclosure provisions should apply to Speech Now, and that the provisions of 434C, which are substantially similar to 434F, are adequate to address the government's interest in in disclosure in this case. Indeed, Your Honor, the precise disclosure provision at issue in Citizens United was 434F, the reason being that the event or the speech that triggered the entire issue in Citizens United was electioneering communications, and electioneering communications are disclosed under 434F. But as Your Honors probably are aware, the Supreme Court addressed not only electioneering communications, but independent expenditures in general, which are simply expenditures for express advocacy. Corporations are prevented from engaging in independent expenditures as well. Presumably, after the Supreme Court's decision last week, if a corporation makes an independent expenditure that's not an electioneering communication, that is, it's not within the 30 or 60 day window, and it's not a broadcast communication, it's just a general independent expenditure, 434C is the provision that corporations will disclose on. That is the precise provision in this case that we are seeing.
The court didn't say that was the limit of the disclosure obligations that could be imposed.
I'm sorry.
The court did not say that that was the limit to what the government can do in terms of imposing disclosure obligations.
It didn't say that that was the limit, Your Honor. It didn't use those words. But by implication, the fact that it focused on the PAC requirement as a burdensome requirement that amounted, along with 441B, to a ban on speech. That is, it was not an adequate alternative for speech. At least insofar as the FEC's argument here is concerned, I think addresses that argument.
What's the precise additional burden that would be imposed by doing the forms that are at issue here? I guess the Form 1 and the Form 3X schedules.
Your Honor, the burdens that the Supreme Court was talking about go well beyond simply disclosure or the disclosure forms that one uses. The disclosure, the Form 3X, that is the proper disclosure form to use for a PAC, a political committee, is far more detailed and burdensome. It requires, in effect, tracking.
Is it just the time? Is that it'll take more
no,
time
Your Honor,
to
just,
do it?
Not at all. I mean, to step back, I think our argument ultimately is precisely the point that the Supreme Court made in Citizens United. In other words, we aren't saying that it's just a matter of filling out a precise form and that one form is more burdensome than another. We are saying that the entire mechanism of having to spend through a PAC, create a separate PAC, become an entirely different type of organization, appoint a treasurer, have to forward.
That's really getting around the question. The question should be, what exactly about these forms and these disclosure obligations is so burdensome as to violate the First Amendment, even though the Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld disclosure obligations of a variety of kinds?
Well, Your Honor, I think that ultimately it's the overall burden of PACs. But I don't think it's appropriate to say
Can I just ask you precisely about Judge Kavanaugh's question? And about this Form 3X, if, as you say in your governing documents and in your proposed findings of fact, that SpeechNow does not provide funding to political parties, doesn't make direct expenditures, doesn't do loans, you don't do any of that, right? Just independent expenditures.
That's correct.
Okay. Then you don't give to candidates or political parties. Then it looks to me like you'll only have to fill out Schedule A, which is contributions, and B, which is disbursements. And those are exactly like A and B, A and E of Form 5. So where's the additional burden?
Your Honor, the additional burden goes beyond just the precise forms that we have to fill out.
Well, but do you agree it's the same?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
that. Do you agree with me that, is there any reason, do you agree with my question, that is that that filling out the form 3X isn't any different.
I don't think
the forms you now have to fill out.
Your Honor, assuming somebody with knowledge that already understands.
Well, I just asked you about the two. I just asked you about the specific schedules for the two forms, and to me they look identical. And I'm just curious as to whether that's correct or not. Because if I'm correct, then it seems to me the burden is exactly the same, which is, I think, what Judge Kavanaugh was getting.
Your Honor, the forms are very similar, but I don't think it's appropriate then to conclude from that the burden is the same. In this case,
what is the additional burden?
What the
What is the additional
burden? It's the additional burden that the Supreme Court talked about, having to plow through hundreds of rules to decide all of your obligations. I mean, that can't be ignored from the Supreme Court's case. This court should, in our view...
What's the difference in the A and D forms that Judge Tatel was asking about?
Your Honor, I think there's substantial... I'm sorry.
Or the obligation imposed on the reporter.
The ultimate form for... It's Form 3X for political committees is far more detailed, so...
But I just... The question I just asked you was, for speech now, it looks to me like it's identical to the form you already agree you have no objection to fill.
Your Honor, I think they are substantially the same. So I do agree with that point.
Me, it looks like the only difference is a treasurer. You have to have a treasurer and a bank account.
Well, that's one difference, Your Honor.
Are there any others?
I'm sorry.
What are they? What are the other differences?
The other difference is it's the overall regulatory burden. I think the court...
That's not answering this question.
Okay.
Don't tell us about overall burdens. Tell us about what the additional burden is.
It's appointing a treasurer...
This reporting requirement.
Sure, Your Honor. It is appointing a treasurer. It's having to forward all receipts to the treasurer within a certain amount of time. It is having
Don't
to...
Don't you have to do that under existing regulations?
No, Your Honor. Not if it's not a political committee. It doesn't have to.
Are you subject to the reporting in 26 U.S.C. 527?
Yes, Your Honor.
Doesn't that... That's an IRS report.
That
doesn't
is
Doesn't that cover most of this as well?
I'm sorry.
Doesn't that require much of the same information?
It does, Your Honor. But
okay, so you have to give it to the IRS.
Yes.
The additional burden of giving it to the FEC is what?
Yeah, the additional burden of being a political committee under the FEC is the time that it takes to set up the committee. Importantly, Your Honor, the fact that it is impossible.
The committee's been set up.
Well, no, the PAC has not been set up yet.
Yeah, we're asking you not about the setting up, but about the reporting requirements. Well, just narrow yourself to
okay,
reporting.
Okay, then that's fine.
Don't tell us about any overall burdens,
certainly
about any setting up committees.
Okay.
You have an organization.
Yes.
You say you don't have to be a PAC. Okay, that's a different question.
All right.
You don't have to be a PAC. Assume you don't have to be a PAC. Assume you've won that part.
Okay.
And we're just talking about whether you are nonetheless required under the reporting requirements.
Then in that respect, with direct answer to Judge Ginsburg's question, is they are substantially similar, especially if you look at 527.
So just calling you a PAC and not making you do anything except the reporting is not really going to impose any additional burden, right? If we hold everything else unconstitutional except that, the reporting requirement by itself.
I think that's true, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, let's go on to when you have to, when you become subject to this.
So the other burdens then?
Yeah. Well, you know, your argument that none of this kicks in until you expend your $1,000.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
If I recall your argument that you're not subject to any of these requirements until you've expended $1,000.
Well, that's true. As a political committee, that's when political committee status kicks in. That is when Speech Now spends $1,000 for express advocacy, it becomes a political committee. Now, the additional burdens, if I may...
Well, actually, I think isn't that an issue as to whether it's when it expends the money or when it receives the money?
Well, that's true, Your Honor. Our fifth question is the question of when we would have to register as a political committee if the court held that we had to become a political committee.
And you're saying only when you expend the money?
Yes, Your Honor, exactly.
The government says when you receive the money.
Not when we just receive the money, Your Honor. And I think that gets to another point.
So what's the additional problem about complying once you receive the money as opposed to waiting until you've expended it?
Your Honor, if you simply are isolating this on the disclosure form basis, it probably isn't a substantially different burden. But so I want to answer the court's question. I don't want to go beyond that. But if we're solely looking at the precise forms, and we assume that a person knows exactly what forms to fill out, then I think from that point, it's not tremendously burdensome. But the overall question is, making somebody a political committee when they haven't even engaged in speech means they have to comply with all of the other burdens before knowing if they're even going to be able to raise enough money to make their advertisements. That's the position that Speech Now is in.
Well, the threshold of $1,000 is the same, is it not, whether you receive it or expend it?
It is, yes, Your Honor. But I mean, to put this in the context of Speech Now, that means as soon as Mr. Keating raises $1,000, even before he knows if he's going to have enough money to make his independent expenditures, which were, after all, you know, in hundreds of thousands of dollars, he has to then form a political committee and comply with the burdens of political committees without even knowing whether he's actually going to be able to
speak. Well, he has the factual findings here are that you have, and you've represented, that you have donors anxious to give various sums of money, including in one instance $115,000.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows he's going to get that.
For these independent expenditures, that's true, Your Honor. That's not necessarily true down the line. And as the Supreme Court made clear in the Citizens United decision, one of the problems with PAC status is having to wade through all of the regulations that accompany PAC status essentially means that ad hoc groups that want to create themselves on the spur of the moment when...
You're making an as applied challenge here, are you not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're not an ad hoc group that wants to do something on the spur of the moment.
Well, Your Honor, I disagree with that. We were an ad hoc group that did want to do something on the
spur. But you're not an ad hoc group anymore. You're an organized group that has a name. It's got a board or advisors.
Well, that's
it
true,
has
Your
promises.
Honor.
Promises.
But, I mean, that I think, you know, begs the question, ultimately. The David Keating, if he could have avoided precisely the burdens that the Supreme Court talked about last week, would not have had to go through all that, wouldn't have had to go to the FEC, make an advisory opinion request, and ask them, in effect, for permission to speak. So, I mean, it is true now. I mean, in a sense, Your Honors are holding the fact that David Keating has had to endure these burdens, had to do what he's had to do, as the, in a sense, the answer to the burden question. I think that kind of flips the proper analysis. The question
you agree, don't you, that under the tax law that you have decided you wish to comply with, you have a lot of things you must do in terms of organization, disclosure, registration. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I wouldn't agree that they're comparable to becoming a PAC.
I didn't ask you that.
Well, then, that's true, Your Honor. As a 527, they have to...
Right. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing you mentioned was burdensome tracking under the FEC regulations. Is that correct?
No, it's not the only other thing we mentioned.
Oh. Is there any burdensome tracking where you're only doing express advocacy? And you've already indicated that you're only going to accept money from certain types of persons, and you're only going to use it for certain types of purposes.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the tracking goes to every single penny that David Keating spent.
And what do you mean by tracking?
I mean that he has to effectively track every money, every penny that he spends for paper, pencils.
Don't you have to do that in order to disclose?
No, Your Honor. No, I mean, not necessarily.
If I give you $1,000, how are you going to disclose that I gave you $1,000 unless you have a record of it?
No, that much is clear, Your Honor, if the money is being given to Speech Now for its independent expenditures. That doesn't necessarily mean...
You said that's all you're going to do.
That's all we're going to do. Yeah, that's true, Your Honor. But, I mean, there are other administrative expenses that will accompany Speech Now as an operating group that Mr. Keating wouldn't have to track.
So you're talking about rent, leasing,
yes.
Electricity bills, all of that.
That's true, Your Honor. Yes, that's right. I mean,
under your theory, couldn't someone donate to Speech Now or to another committee like this and pay for all the administrative expenses and not be subject to disclosure?
Not to Speech Now, Your Honor.
Let's take it out of Speech Now. So under your theory, though, the First Amendment, someone could donate and pay for all the administrative expenses of a group, which are often large, and still evade disclosure, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but that is...
And isn't that a problem? Because administrative expenses are often large, and so someone who is paying or picking up all the administrative expenses is going to be someone that the public would be interested in knowing about, consistent with what the Supreme Court has said about disclosure obligations.
Your Honor, I don't think it's a problem for the reasons that's precisely what a corporation can do now. The disclosure that the Supreme Court upheld as applied to corporations do not require corporations to disclose every administrative expense.
Suppose it was a foreign contribution for administrative expenses.
Foreign contributions...
No one would know.
I'm sorry?
The FEC would have no idea of knowing that because it wouldn't be reported.
That's not true, Your Honor. Well, it is
true. Under your theory, it would not be reported.
Your Honor, that's not true because SpeechNow can't accept foreign contributions in there, and foreign contributors are barred.
But the FEC doesn't have to rely on your governing documents for that. You could change them. FEC would never know.
441B would prohibit SpeechNow from accepting foreign contributions. That's a matter of law now. So SpeechNow can't accept foreign contributions.
But how would the FEC ever know if you
don't
did?
Report? How are they going to know?
You don't report.
Your Honor, if somebody made a foreign if a foreign entity made a contribution,
if that were a satisfactory answer, then we wouldn't really need an IRS.
They will be disclosed, Your Honor. They will be disclosed under 434C. Just like any other donation to SpeechNow that goes to fund its independent expenditures.
No, the hypothetical was funding administrative expenses, Tatel's hypothetical.
But, Your Honor, SpeechNow can't accept all the
That's why it was a hypothetical.
Your Honor, I don't know that there's such a group that, I mean, that's the problem with the hypothetical.
What? There's not a group that accepts earmarked administrative expenses. The FEC says half of the expenses of 527s are administrative.
But, Your Honor, a group unlike SpeechNow, without SpeechNow's bylaws, is still prohibited from accepting them under 441D.
But you could change your bylaws.
No, the bylaws can't be changed. That's a prohibition of 441B. It's in the statute.
You could ignore your bylaws.
It's not the bylaws, Your Honor. It's the law that prevents either foreign nationals or...
You're missing my point. The point is that you could ignore your bylaws and accept an earmarked contribution for administrative expenses from a foreign country. And because you're not reporting them, the FEC would never know that.
Your Honor, if that is true, if that is the premise, then I don't see what political committee status is going to change. If David Keating is really going to violate the law and commit a felony... And the foreign national is also going to commit a felony and accepting these contributions. I don't understand how the additional burden of political committee status is suddenly going to make him into a lawful individual. I mean, if he's prepared to commit a felony in accepting this money, he's certainly prepared to commit a felony in failing to disclose it. So adding yet one more law that under the hypothetical, this lawless person is going to violate, I don't see how that changes anything. I mean,
could I ask you a question about the burden on an ad hoc organization?
Uh-huh.
So you want to be a 527, right?
Yes.
And you want to file. How ad hoc can you be if you have to make that filing with the IRS?
The filings with the IRS only have to happen when an organization is actually engaging in activity. That is, so for instance, SpeechNow,
It's not going to take that. Let's get over the this is on the advanced part. Mm-hmm. Let's get past that just for a moment. Imagine, okay, you do want to engage in activity. There's no doubt about
yes.
it. At some point, you're going to have to file.
Yes.
So how much of a burden, and you talk about the need to wade through a lot of regulations and rules. So in my own experience, the IRS has a lot of rules. So if you're prepared to wade through the 527 rules, mm-hmm. how much different is it to have to wade through the FECA rules?
Your Honor, the IRS rules and the forms are very straightforward. They're a lot simpler than the FECA. I mean, they are not as complicated. If you compare the forms,
At the instructions. They're pretty long, actually.
Have you looked at the 990?
The forms may be short, but the instructions are pretty long.
True, Your Honor, but the in order for SpeechNow to become a political committee, it doesn't just have to look at the disclosure provision. There are hundreds of rules that apply precisely to political committee status. It is not really possible for a group simply to say, going in, we already know what the rules say. They have to wade through the rules and understand.
They'll have to wade through the IRS rules anyway. So a normal human being is not going to be able to do either of these two.
No, it's going to require a lawyer.
You're going to need a lawyer or a treasurer or something anyway in order to be isn't that right?
A lawyer can't get through something.
That may be, Your Honor, but the Supreme Court has never held that having to comply with IRS rules and be something under the Internal Revenue Code.
The IRS hasn't addressed this question at all, so that's why we're here, unfortunately. If they had addressed it, we could just cite them and that would be the end of it.
Your Honor, I think they have addressed it, but...
They have addressed the difference between IRS rules and FECA rules?
Yes, Your Honor. No, not precisely that, but I want to answer your question, so I don't want to jump past that. So I want to make sure I've answered your question.
So I have just one more question along this line, which is you actually get a benefit by being a PAC with respect to the IRS. the 527 rules say that they don't apply if you're a protester.
That's true.
So you get to avoid all of that. Isn't the elimination of that burden significant also in our analysis?
I don't think it is, Your Honor, because it's a, I mean, that argument could cut both ways. If we were a 527, we wouldn't have to be, at least under our argument, a PAC. But
by being a PAC, there's some alleviation of the 527 requirements. And do we or don't we need to weigh that in our evaluation of what your net burden is?
No, Your Honor, you shouldn't weigh that. And the reason is this. In the MCFL decision, the Supreme Court faced a similar type of argument. The FEC said that the Supreme Court has upheld particular types of tax status with the attendant burdens on groups like MCFL, Massachusetts Citizens for Life. That was a case called Reagan versus Taxation Without Representation. The FEC relied on. The Supreme Court, in a footnote in that decision, said, in essence, the fact that the IRS can make a group become a particular type of entity under tax rules and make it comply with the burdens there does not translate over into federal election rules.
That's a footnote to MCFL, you said?
Yes. And just to complete the point, what the Supreme Court said was that's a function of tax status, and it has to do with nonprofit status, tax-exempt status, things like that. The fact that the government, the fact that one does not have a right to favorable tax status does not mean that the FEC is entitled to regulate the group because of the type of speech that it wants to engage in. That was the distinction that the court drew in, I think, addressing a very similar point to the point the court is making or the questions that the court is asking you now. Your Honors, if I may, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
We'll hear from the commission.
May it please the Court, I'm David Kolker for the Federal Election Commission. The plaintiff's challenge to the contribution limits applicable to political committees must fail because it repeatedly conflates the distinction between contribution limits and expenditure limits, and because the Supreme Court has never struck down a contribution limit by tracing how the funds received are eventually spent. This case does not involve any spending limits. There is no limit on a political committee's ability to spend as much as it like as it likes on independent expenditure.
How does Citizens United change your analysis? We've all read your brief that was filed before Citizens United. How does that change your analysis?
It really doesn't, Your Honor. Because Citizens United was about a ban on speech, and we have no such thing here. What we have is a limit on contributions. The Supreme Court has repeatedly subjected contribution limits.
What's the justification for the limits on contributions then?
Well, in this case, you mean?
Yes.
Well,
this is the one we're asking you about right now. Yes, Ken.
There are many justifications. It mostly has to do with the way that the Supreme Court has looked at contribution limits, and that the contribution limits in this case help evade evasion of the Act's direct contribution limits.
The Supreme Court in Citizens United was very careful to phrase it as contributions to candidates or direct contributions to candidates throughout the opinion. It wasn't talking, when it characterized Buckley, it talked about contributions to candidates. It wasn't some kind of free-floating contributions to other groups that it was talking about there.
That's true, Your Honor.
And I guess the larger question is, if an unlimited independent expenditure is not corrupting, how can a group of people getting together to make an independent expenditure suddenly become corrupting?
Well, in Citizens United, the court explicitly said that it was not dealing with what it has said before about contribution limits. And the court specifically, at page 43, the court specifically said Citizens United has not suggested that the court should reconsider whether contribution limits should be subjected to rigorous First
Amendment
scrutiny.
And my point was they were very careful, and you can trace it, you know, page 3, 10, 26, 29, 40, contributions to candidates.
That's right, Your Honor, but nothing in Citizens United addresses or undermines the court's other holdings in numerous other cases about contribution limits being valid if they help prevent circumvention of those direct contribution limits to candidates. And so starting in Buckley, the court had a broad definition of contributions. When the court upheld the $25,000 annual limit on contributions, it defined that term broadly to include money given to organizations that are earmarked for political purposes. And clearly that includes contributions that end up being spent on independent expenditures. When the court in the first of the two Colorado Republican cases ruled, what it was looking at first and foremost, or initially, was whether political parties could make unlimited independent expenditures. And the court said that political parties weren't that different from other political committees, and in fact had the right to do that. But in the course of that discussion, the court looked at the potential for corruption that might come about if once parties were able to do that. And in the course of that discussion, the court talked about independent expenditures being spending that could be used to evade the direct contribution limits. And this is what the court said. It said the greatest danger of corruption, therefore, appears to be from the ability of donors to give sums up to $20,000 to a party, which may be used for independent party expenditures for the benefit of a particular candidate. We could understand how Congress were to conclude that the potential for evasion of the individual contribution limits was a serious matter, might decide to change the statute's limitations on contributions to political parties. So the court was explicitly talking about how independent expenditures could be used to evade those direct contribution limits, and that in fact, if Congress thought that there was a problem now that parties could make unlimited independent expenditures, the way to deal with that was not to try to limit those independent expenditures, but instead to limit perhaps further the contributions that political parties could take in that would then in turn be used to make independent expenditures that could benefit candidates. And nothing in Citizens United undermines any of that. It was simply silent about that.
Just on the logic of your theory, if one person spends $1 million to take out an ad, that's constitutionally protected.
Yes.
But if five people get together and contribute $6,000 each to a nonprofit to support a ad, that is corrupting.
Your Honor, once people
and I guess what sense does that make?
This is why it makes sense, Your Honor, because under the Supreme Court's holdings, there is a constitutional difference.
Assume there's no Supreme Court holding. Assume you're taking this as a case of first impression. What is the justification for the distinction that Judge Kavanaugh just made?
The justification, I mean, it's in line with the Supreme Court holding, Your Honor, that there's a fundamental difference when people are speaking in their own names versus when they set up a separate legal entity. And once they set up a separate legal entity, as they have done here, and they simply give money to that entity, speaking.
What's the interest that serves by making that distinction? Obviously, there is a distinction. They're not the same thing. They're not precisely the same thing. You can find a difference. But what difference does that difference make? What is the justification?
The justification
for the treatment of the millionaire paying a million here and five people paying $6,000 apiece over there. Why do you get to burden the second but not the first?
It goes back to what I was saying about what the court said in the first Colorado case, that independent expenditures can be used to evade those direct limits on contributions to candidates, and that there's a very different burden.
That would be true of an individual's independent expenditures as well, then.
Yes, but the issue here, again, is not limiting individuals.
And that's where the theory, that's the hurdle I have with your theory, as you know.
Remember, there's no limit on an individual's expenditures, obviously. There's no limit on what Speech Now can spend. This is not a situation where five people are writing checks made out to a network to run the ad in their own names. What we're talking about is people coming together, creating a separate organization. The money will be spent in that organization's name. And in fact, we have the quintessential translation of money donated but then being used by somebody else to decide how that money will be spent that the court talked about going back to Buckley. In this particular case, the donors to Speech Now are going to be passive. They're not going to decide which candidates are opposed or supported. They're not going to decide what the advertisements say. Those decisions are going to be made by Mr. Keating. And that is the quintessential thing that the court talked about transforming a contribution into speech that's going to be made by something else. And the difference is, was also alluded to in the Supreme Court decision in California Medical Association in footnote 17, where the court distinguished the situation where you have a group of people coming together to simply spend money jointly. So this is not the case where Mr. Young and the other donors to Speech Now are going to write checks directly to the media outlet and decide themselves what the ads are going to say and have their names on the disclaimers. That's not the case. That's a different case. The Supreme Court set that aside in California Medical Association and said, we don't have to address that here because the PAC in California Medical Association was set up as a separate legal entity. And that's the same thing that we have here.
Is there anything here that's suggestive of the danger of corruption or the appearance of corruption?
Yes, Your Honor, but I'd like to start by answering that question by pointing out...
There is?
Yes.
What is it?
Well, if I may, I have sort of two answers to it. And if I could start by pointing out a very important background principle, which is that unlimited contributions to political committees have been illegal for many, many years. So we wouldn't expect to have a lot of direct evidence about what that would lead to. And in fact, we have a model for...
Getting to an answer to the question.
I am going to answer the question, Your Honor. I promise. But I do want to point this out, that in terms of the burden that we have to come up with evidence, this is like the situation we were in the second of the Colorado Republican cases. Because at that point, the court was dealing with...
You don't sound like you're getting much closer to the answer.
I promise I'll get there, Your Honor.
Well, I promise you'll get there in about the next minute, please.
Okay. The point from Colorado Republican is that there were limits on parties' coordinated expenditures in the years leading up to that decision. And the court said, quote, since there is no recent experience with unlimited coordinated spending, the question is whether experience under the present law confirms a serious threat of abuse from the unlimited coordinated party spending. So with that in background, we do have evidence in the record about the potential for these kinds of large contributions to be turned into independent expenditures. We have the example from the Keating Five from years ago where money was given to an independent expenditure group that was going to help Senator Cranston. We have the example of Congressman Snowbarger being offered independent expenditures to be made if he would vote a particular way on legislation about a casino. We have an example from the state of Wisconsin where a legislator was asking people to give money to independent groups in exchange for legislative favors.
And that would all still be true of an individual's independent expenditure as well.
Yes, but again, Your Honor...
That's the problem. Your theory would justify ultimately limiting an individual's independent expenditures, and the Supreme Court has repeatedly said, including last week, that that's...
I understand, Your Honor, but we're not here defending a limit on individuals' expenditures. We're only... here defending a contribution
limit.
Don't
you have to be able to make a distinction in the potential for corruption in order to justify the distinction between individual contributions and the...
No, Your Honor. I think it's clear even from Citizens United that because of the different standards of review for the fundamental distinction between contribution limits and expenditure limits, that what may be insufficient to justify an expenditure limit may be sufficient to justify a contribution limit. I mean, in the Citizens United case, they talked about the fact pattern that arose in the Caperton case. And although the court clearly didn't find it sufficient to justify the independent expenditure limit, the court did find it sufficient to require a recusal of a judge. And in fact, the other important point that was raised in Citizens United is that the court specifically distinguished the situation that was at issue in McConnell, where the court on page 45 of the slip opinion in Citizens United said, you know, in BICRA, we were dealing with facts where access had been sold through soft money contributions to parties. But we're not dealing with soft money here. We're dealing with an expenditure limit. So the court distinguished what it had done in McConnell. And I think McConnell's dispositive in this case because of the facts at issue there and the reasoning of the court. When the court upheld Title I of BICRA, it was dealing with limits on what parties could take in contributions, that is, the soft money contributions that were above and beyond the hard money limits. And in the course of analyzing whether those limits were constitutional, it's critical to recognize that what the court was dealing with was money coming into the political parties that could not be spent on contributions to candidates. It could not even have been spent on express advocacy. At issue in Title I of BCRA was soft money that had been spent on things like get-out-the-vote drives or even candidate-focused issue advocacy. But the ban on soft money in Title I of BCRA had nothing to do with money that the parties were taking in that would then be passed on in the form of direct contributions to candidates. And therefore, it's very much like the situation we have here. So the court could not have upheld Title I of BCRA simply on a narrow anti-circumvention, anti-pass-through rationale. In other words, it would not have been enough to justify Title I of BCRA if all that Congress could do was have contribution limits to the extent that the money taken in by a political committee could then be used to make direct contributions to candidates. And the court looked at the soft money contributions and what it was being spent on and recognized that the kinds of things that the parties were spending those soft money contributions on were of benefit to candidates and raised the potential for corruption.
Well, there were two differences, though, right? Because in McConnell, the court emphasized that political parties had a unity of interest with candidates and office holders, which is not true of outside groups having the same unity of interest. And secondly, there was the record of abuse, namely that parties had specifically sold access to candidates and office holders in exchange for the donations. And again, there's no record evidence here, and I take your point that it would be hard to have such record evidence.
Well, Your Honor, it is certainly true that Title I of BCRA only applied to political parties, but there are a few important reasons why a political committee like Speech Now can be treated like a political party. First of all, in terms of the doctrinal analysis of the court itself, in footnote 48 of McConnell, where the court elaborated upon the reasons why Congress could have the limits on soft money, it really equated political committees like Speech Now with the political parties. When it elaborated upon the meaning of the California Medical Association case, it talked about that case and explained to us that the decision in that case also could not have been what it was if the only justification for contribution limits was to prevent the recipient of the money from taking that money and going on and making direct contributions to candidates. And that analysis was critical to its reasoning in Title I, and it told us more about what California Medical Association means, and in the course of that discussion, treated political committees like the political parties. In addition, in other parts of McConnell, the court upheld restrictions on solicitations to tax-exempt groups like Speech Now. There are restrictions in BCRA on what political parties can do and what federal candidates can do to raise money for tax-exempt groups like Speech Now, and the court upheld those because the court recognized that they could be used to circumvent the act, that they could be used to act like parties. And the record before you has a great deal of facts, and Judge Robertson, in his opinion on the preliminary injunction, went on at great length explaining how these parties have become, in the wake of BCRA, used, as some people have called them, shadow parties to take in money. And while they are formally independent from the political parties, they are very professionalized. They have taken in tens of millions of dollars. They have very sophisticated ways of testing their ads, like the political parties. And the political parties have, or people associated with the political parties who are very high ranking, have quietly blessed what they're doing. So they can have very close ties to the parties and to the candidates. Moreover, in the two Colorado Republican decisions, the court analyzed to the extent political parties were and were not different from other political committees. And both of them support our position, because in the first Colorado case, what you had was the political parties arguing that we should be able to make unlimited independent expenditures. Previously, it had been decided in the National Conservative Political Action Committee case by the court that political committees had the right to make unlimited independent expenditures. And the parties came in and said, argued in the first Colorado case and prevailed, that they too should be allowed to be able to do that, and the Constitution can't prevent it. And the court agreed, and part of that analysis was saying that, yes, while parties have close ties to their candidates, They're not so joined at the hip with them that they don't have the right to make independent expenditures. So they were treated the same way as political committees. And then in the second Colorado Republican case, you kind of have the same sense of similarity between political parties and political committees, but this time leading to justifying the limits on coordinated expenditures that political parties are subject to. And what the court essentially said was that, you know, in some ways political parties are better and worse in terms of corruption. That yes, they are very closely associated with their candidates. And in fact, that perhaps gives them a heightened First Amendment right to associate with those candidates. And on the other hand, the court essentially said, well, there's kind of a dark side to that because the parties also become, for that very reason, very efficient mechanisms for outside donors to use them to gain undue influence and access over the candidates. But the bottom line was that the court found that for purposes of coordinated spending, the political parties aren't that different from other political committees and can constitutionally be subject to limits on their coordinated spending.
That's very interesting, but I'm not sure why you're telling us this. Are you assimilating speech now to a political party?
Well, the reason I think this is important, Your Honor, is because the other side or questions have been raised about whether the reasoning from McConnell in upholding Title I applies to groups like Speech Now, and I think it
applies to the extent that it's not made inapplicable by Citizens United.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
To the extent that it's not made inapplicable by the intervening decision in Citizens United.
Well, I don't think Citizens United says anything about how similar political parties are.
But it does say this. It says, we now conclude that independent expenditures, including those made by corporations, not exclusively, but including those made by corporations, do not give rise to corruption or the appearance of corruption.
I understand,
and you seem to be telling us, well, if you think about political parties, maybe you'll just think that the Supreme Court got it wrong.
Well, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that on page 45 of Citizens United, the court said the BICRA record establishes that certain donations to political parties called soft money were made to gain access to elected officials. This case, however, is about independent expenditures, not soft money.
But given what Judge Ginsburg points to, I think it's on page 42 of the opinion, what is the government's interest now in this kind of regulation over this kind of interest?
Again, Your Honor, if there is
no corruption or no appearance of corruption, the Supreme Court says it doesn't give rise to such. What is the justification for the regulation of the group?
The justification remains what the court said in the first Colorado Republican case, that independent expenditures can be used as a means of circumventing the Act's limits on direct contributions.
What do you do with the language from Citizen United that seems to be contrary to that? I'm not hearing you address Citizens United.
Well, Your Honor, I obviously have to concede that in terms of justifying a direct ban on speech, the court has said there's insufficient evidence of independent expenditures being corrupting to allow that. But the decision is silent on the required justification for contribution limits.
Is circumvention an independent rationale, or isn't it linked to the corruption? Obviously, you need to avoid, you're trying to avoid the language of Citizens United, which says that corruption is much different than what you had argued in your brief. It's a new world. Corruption means a lot less than we thought what it did before. You seem to be trying to avoid the force of that by saying circumvention is an independent rationale for justifying regulation. But circumvention not directly related to corruption here?
The court has repeatedly upheld anti-circumvention provisions.
Why? Because it's related to rooting out corruption?
Because without those, the court has upheld anti-circumvention provisions without saying that they themselves directly prevent corruption. The court has said, I believe in McConnell, that all members of the court view that circumvention is a rationale to uphold certain provisions. So, yes, we are not under the burden of showing that every anti-circumvention provision in and of itself directly prevents corruption.
What's the point of the anti-circumvention provisions then?
The same way that,
if it's not linked to corruption, then what is it?
It's linked to corruption. It's just not a direct prevention of corruption.
All right, so it's prevents circumventing a rule that in turn is meant to prevent corruption.
Yes.
So if there's no corruption under the Citizens United decision, then what justification is there for using circumvention as a weight to regulate? If you're not circumventing to do something, circumventing is to serve some other interest.
The limits on the contributions at issue here still help prevent circumvention of the direct contribution limits to candidates.
In order to accomplish what goal?
How can go ahead.
Well, again, I go back to the reasoning of Colorado Republican 1, where the court said that independent expenditures can be a benefit to candidates. They can be used to evade the restrictions.
Now, that was before the Supreme Court spoke in Citizens United, right?
Yes, but again, the burden of proof was very different. In Citizens United, the court was dealing with strict scrutiny and a ban on speech.
Suppose it's just intermediate scrutiny.
Pardon?
Suppose it's just intermediate scrutiny. Well, still, what is the government's interest in the regulation?
The government's interest is in preventing circumvention of the Act's direct contribution limits.
Because?
Because independent expenditures can be used to benefit candidates, and therefore, although Congress cannot limit those independent expenditures,
we now conclude that independent expenditures, including those made by corporations, do not give rise to corruption or the appearance of corruption.
But, Your Honor, again on page 45, the court also says, distinguishes BCRA, distinguishes the soft money contribution ban.
And on 45, and this is, it says, in fact, there's only scant evidence that independent expenditures even ingratiate.
I understand, Your Honor. Obviously, it's very important to us that the court explicitly distinguished BCRA and Title I and what the court did in McConnell upholding that. And said that was about soft money contributions. That was about money being used not directly by the parties to give to candidates, but to do other things that will benefit candidates. And there's nothing in Citizens United that undercuts what the court did in Title I of regarding Title I of BCRA. And in fact, there's explicit language on page 45 saying that this decision is distinguishable from
your that. Your theory, going back to one of Judge Ginsburg's earlier questions, is that yes, Speech Now and other outside groups are the same as political parties.
I wouldn't say they're the same. I would say that in terms of the constitutional restrictions on them, they can be treated equivalently, yes.
Because, like political parties, they can be a vehicle for circumventing something?
Yes. And because they too can be, like political parties, have close relationships to the candidates in the parties. The other cases that I would like to...
Is that true as applied to this organization?
I'm sorry, Your
Honor? Is what you just said about ties applicable to this organization making this as applied challenge?
Yes, Your Honor. They've obviously... you know, they haven't really done anything yet, so it's a little hard to know what they're going to do. But the important point is that they can't muzzle their donors and their donors' lobbyists. So if people want to give $1 million to Speech Now and Speech Now then goes and spends it to help a candidate, there's nothing to prevent the donor or the donor's agents or lobbyists from going to the candidates that were helped and pointing out to them what happened because of their donation to Speech Now.
Indeed, your disclosure requirements enable them to document it.
Pardon?
Your disclosure requirements enable them to document that they
That's
made the
true,
contributions, right?
That's true, Your Honor.
But they can't earmark the contributions.
No. Well, they can't earmark them. But, of course, they're not. Speech Now isn't claiming to make contributions, just independent expenditures.
That's, I'm sorry. They can't earmark their donation for the independent expenditure favoring a particular
Oh,
candidate.
I think they could. I don't think. I mean.
But the rules of Speech Now prohibit that.
Well, you're right, Your Honor, and I think the fundamental point is that Mr. Keating is going to make the decision, so it appears that there's not going to be that kind of earmarking. But that doesn't really matter. If Mr. Keating decides to spend $1 million that came from the donor to help somebody, the donor can still go. I mean, right now, for example, Mr. Young is going to provide most of the money, and I don't mean to impute his motives, but since he's going to put in most of the money, if Speech Now went and spent $140,000 tomorrow on an ad, it would really be mostly Mr. Young's money, and there'd be nothing to stop him from telling whoever was helped that it originated from him.
How dare he speak?
Pardon?
How dare he speak? You don't seem to value First Amendment values very highly, Counsel.
I'm defending the act, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I would also like to just point out that there have been Supreme Court cases and cases from this court that clearly allow and contemplate regulation of groups that make independent expenditures as political committees. When the Supreme Court in Buckley developed the major purpose test, it did so in the very context of independent expenditures, that it was concerned that without the narrowing construction of political committee, that groups that engage purely in issue discussion would be reached, and it therefore established the major purpose test, clearly in having in mind the fact that you could have a group that made only independent expenditures be subject to the political committee requirements. And in fact, this court, in the en banc Aikens decision, which admittedly was vacated on other grounds, by a vote of 9-2, found that in fact the major purpose test should only be applied to groups that only make independent expenditures. So it was clearly contemplated by that decision that the requirements for political committee status could apply to groups that make independent expenditures only. And of course, in the Massachusetts Citizens for Life decision from the Supreme Court, the court looked at that corporation and said that it was entitled, because it was an ideological corporation that took no business money, that it could make independent expenditures from its corporate treasury. But when it gave the as-applied remedy to that organization, it limited it. And it said that should MCFL's independent spending become its major purpose, then it would have to live by the rules and obligations for political committees. So again, in that instance, you had the Supreme Court clearly contemplating that groups that make only independent expenditures could be constitutionally regulated as a political committee.
Mr. Kolker, what is the government's interest in insisting on or in having disclosure when a committee, when SpeechNow has received $1,000 in contributions as opposed to such time as it expends the money?
Well, Your Honor, the interest is that SpeechNow is a self-professed organization whose major purpose is to advocate for or against the election of candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the informational interest for the public, knowing who has money out there that's going to be participating in elections, that is useful to the public to know that a group like this has been established.
Well, it's useful in helping them attract contributions, perhaps, but that's not the government's interest.
Well, the government's interest for that kind of disclosure is to provide the public with information. And
all right, so suppose SpeechNow says, we're going to solicit money and receive donations for the purpose of their organizational purpose of helping candidates who are friendly to First Amendment speech. And we're going to do so with respect to the quadrennial gubernatorial election. If any of the final candidates turn out not to be adequately supported. So for the first 3 years of that cycle, we're just going to accept donations. In the fourth year, we may or may not make expenditures. But there's a public interest in having disclosure all along about who's contributing and so on for those first 3 years?
Yes, let me just make sure. You said gubernatorial, so you...
Yeah, well, okay.
So you
make it presidential.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I think the public has an interest in knowing that there are groups out there who are amassing funds that may become active.
What is that interest, rather than idle curiosity or prurience?
Well, I guess it's no different from learning about all political players. If people understand that a group like SpeechNow, with its particular political philosophy, is raising funds, that may cause them to keep an eye on the group. It may cause them to decide that they want to raise money to counter the message. I can't speak for how relevant an individual might find it, but there's certainly an interest in terms of knowing the money that's being collected that may be spent on electoral politics.
You're looking for preemptive strikes in politics, yeah. Right?
Your Honor, my time is up, so.
Unless my colleagues have further questions.
Thank you.
Your time is up. Thank you, counsel. And you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. One quick point on disclosure that I did not make before, Your Honor, is that all of the court's hypotheticals and questions that the court asked me about disclosure would apply equally to an MCFL group. And the court held in MCFL that 434C was perfectly adequate to satisfy the government's interests in MCFL. All of the you know, the exact same questions could be asked about an MCFL group, whether it's more burdensome to disclose as a PAC, et cetera. The court addressed all those in MCFL.
Didn't the court in MCFL then go on to say, but it might be different if the major purpose of the group was nomination or election of a candidate?
It did do that, Your Honor, but in light of Citizens United, major purpose cannot now become, in effect, a substitute for applying strict scrutiny to precisely the sort of things that the Supreme Court just held are burdensome in Citizens United. Indeed, Mr. Kolker mentioned the Aikens case, Your Honor. One of the points that this court made in Aikens was the bizarre result that the larger the group would be under the major purpose test, the more money it could spend, and therefore the smaller the group is, the less money it can spend. Now, the Supreme Court said, one of the other points that we haven't mentioned yet in Citizens United, is that it's improper for the government or courts to make distinctions among speakers based on their wealth. The major purpose test, if applied to SpeechNow, or indeed corporations, if I'm understanding Mr. Kolker correctly, Citizens United would allow even major purpose corporations to become political committees, notwithstanding everything else it said. But in any event, if that were applied to SpeechNow, that means the smaller the group is and the less money it spends, the more it can be burdened under the campaign finance laws. That just doesn't make any sense under Citizens United. Now, Mr. Kolker calls Citizens United an expenditure limits case. Your Honors, I think, pointed to the relevant language in Citizens United. I think the appropriate thing to call Citizens United is a burden case. That case was fundamentally about not just a direct ban on corporate expenditures, but the alternative to that ban, which is spending money through a PAC. The court made clear that those restrictions are burdensome as a matter of law, and that burdensome laws trigger strict scrutiny. This court can decide this case under the simple application of strict scrutiny. The laws have to be equivalent. In effect, that's what the Supreme Court just held. Applying strict scrutiny, as Your Honors have
read. Can you win under intermediate scrutiny?
Your Honor, I don't think yes, we can, absolutely. For all the reasons that you made.
How about rational relationship?
Your Honor, I think even under rational relationship, in any event, intermediate scrutiny is stronger than the rational basis test. All roads lead back to corruption. I think that's one of the takeaways from Citizens United. The FEC simply cannot demonstrate corruption under any fair reading of Citizens United.
On the last point that Mr. Kolker and I discussed with regard to the timing of when one becomes subject to these regulations, you devote only the last page or two of your brief to that. And he makes an interesting point that alerting of the public to the accumulation of your fund puts potential opposition speakers on notice and may produce more speech as a result. Do you have an answer to that?
Your Honor, I think exactly the same thing could be said about corporations. I mean, corporations do, and Citizens United is a good example. In fact, Your Honor, Citizens United was actually under a lesser burden than my clients were. Citizens United was able to create its film, raise all its money, and actually create the film. It was only prevented ultimately from disseminating or distributing that film. My clients, under the FEC's argument, can't even raise the money to create their ads before being burdened by what the Supreme Court has just said Citizens United could not be burdened. I think so implicitly, the Supreme Court has sort of answered that question. That one could say precisely the same thing about Citizens United. Nobody knew until Citizens United wanted to distribute its film who was contributing money to that, and yet the Supreme Court recognized that the mere fact that, in effect, groups like SpeechNow would have to ask the FEC for permission violates the First Amendment.
But they upheld the disclosure requirement.
Yeah. Ultimately, when they make their expenditures, Your Honor. We're not fighting disclosure as such.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Unless someone else has questions,
thank you, Your Honor.
Be submitted and we'll give us adjournment.
Good job.
I recognize my own handwriting on it. Well, thank you. It's kind of like the old thing. We don't see that much anymore. Told somebody before that was the takeaway quote. Well, and the other one was 14. Thank you much.
Oh, yeah, there's a number of buildings.